See, whatever situation in which one is put in, one should do the duties corresponding to that situation in a very delightful mode. For example, a man is getting married at the age of 26, 27. He's entering into family life. some of the men who enter into family life are very critical about the man-woman relationship and the nature of women. So sometimes when they enter into family life with such a wrong attitude, they are unsuccessful in marriage. Because they end up spoiling the relationship with the wife, because he treats her as a agent of Maya or something like that. There are many people who are failure in their family life because of mistreating the wife, mistreating family members. So in the 7th canto, 14th chapter, Narada Muni explains to Yudhishthira Maharaj how a grihastha can be very successful, a man, how he should deal with his wife, his children, mother, father, family members in a very responsible way. Everybody should be given dignity and respect and their position. He should be able to focus on his spiritual life without being critical to the other living beings. So therefore, one has to perform the grihastha ashrama duties in a delightful way, correct? In a very joyful way. How he should be very affectionate to parents and wife and children and everything. How he should be affectionate to all living entities. That is explained in that chapter. You will find. So there are very seriously situated devotees in Krishna consciousness who are also simultaneously very affectionate to the relatives and friends in the family also. That doesn't weaken their Krishna consciousness. On the other hand, those who are fanatical fellows or one-sided fellows, they are neither strong in spiritual life nor have a healthy relation in family life because of misunderstandings. Therefore, similarly, if somebody enters brahmacharya ashram, one has to perform brahmacharya's duties delightfully also. Here you see Nabi is entering into grihastha ashram. He is entering into vanaprastha order. And he is going to the forest and performing austerities in a very joyful mood with great enthusiasm. Correct, no? See, in case you see some king, he has been ruling in the world for many long years. Now, earlier he was surrounded by so many ministers and so many servants at his beck and call. Now he is supposed to leave all that and live practically alone in the forest. So there is a possibility of some kind of inferiority complex or loneliness can come to a king who lives in the forest physically, told by the sages and saints, but whose heart is still dwelling on his kingdom. You understand this point? Somebody may go to the forest just because sages saints told him, now you are retired now. And you go to the forest while your son will rule the kingdom. So he may physically go to the forest, but he may be lamenting that I am unable to do the kingly activities. Therefore, any activity you take up, vanaprastha you take up, do it delightfully. Because there are prescriptions for vanaprastha also. In vanaprastha ashram, the responsibilities are different from the grihastha ashram. Grihastha ashram is ashram of taking responsibility. Vanaprastha ashram is ashram of giving up the worldly responsibilities and focusing on spiritual progress. Husband and wife, they fully become focused on spiritual progress. They went to Badrikashrama. They must have been living in the midst of the sages and saints. And other than spiritual focus, there must have been no diversion for them, living in that remote place. And somebody may say, living in the forest all alone, you know, hearing only the chirping of the birds and flowing of Ganga, living in jungle now, where are the ministers? Where is my army? Where are the people who are saluting and doing? Where are the comfortable beddings and cushion seats and everything? We are living in the forest. One should not think like that. Actually, those who hanker like that means they have not yet taken vanaprastha properly. So vanaprastha is an ashram where one renounces the worldly luxuries and comforts and accepts austerity very delightfully. Very joyfully he performed his austerities, it says. Similarly, a man going from a stage of a boy into married life should accept the ashrama, grihastha ashrama responsibilities very delightfully. So this is something very important. Any duty you do, a brahmachari should not be sitting in the ashram and staring at the sky, mera kya hoga, you know, correct, no? Then why is he sitting there? Go get married, take some job, you know, and then be delightful in grihastha ashrama. No, Prabhuji, there I'll get frustrated. Here you will feel lonely and there you will get frustrated. Then where will you go? All the trouble arises due to mind only. Therefore, anything, any undertaking you have taken up, you have put your forward leg, you know, why to worry? Do it very nicely. Whatever you are supposed to do, do it very courageously, confidently, happily, joyfully. They like that he is saying. That is one important point. See, retirement at the end of life is compulsory. Why Prabhupada uses the word compulsory? A Shudra never retires at all. Till his last breath he does not leave the family bonds. Sometimes I have seen in our temple, somebody comes as a vanaprastha, then he says, I have to go for one marriage, I have to go for one birthday party here, some relatives have called here. They go here, there, but they won't be able to stably stick to spiritual life. That means even after you become 60, 70, 80, the worldly obligations and duties don't leave a person. Don't leave a person means he doesn't leave them. It all depends on if he's a very seriously situated spiritual person, then he can leave them all, isn't it? So, fixity and focus in spiritual life doesn't come in this world even after 50, 60, 70, 80. So, therefore, Prabhupada says, retirement at the end of life is compulsory. He says. One purport purpose is, any person in this world, at least 20 years of his life, he should give to God completely, he says. Which means, like say somebody lives till 80, then 60 to 80, one can give to God service. So, that was that point. One more point from the same translation purport. Read it. The fourth theme.
Choosing and training a success or?
No, successor.
Successor.
Yeah. So, who is the successor of our Nabi? Rishabhadev, yeah. And then Rishabhadev, who is his successor? Bharat Maharaj. So, in this way, you will find the kings, they were actually awaiting a successor. If there is a very good successor who can actually lead as the next king, then the king felt himself deeply satisfied. I will show you one verse. See, please recite this. Akila dhara mandala sthiti guptaya asthapya svayam ati vishama vishaya visha jalashayashaya upararama. This is about Swayambhuma, no? See, here it says, Akila means entire universe, Dhara Mandala of planets, Stiti, maintenance of that, and Guptaye, protection. Stiti and Guptaye, maintenance and protection. For doing it, what he did? Priyavrata Asthapya. He situated Priyavrata in the post. And then Swayam, what he personally did? Ati Vishama, very dangerous. Vishaya, material affairs. Visha, like poison. And Jalashaya, like an ocean. Ashayaha, from the disease. Uparadama, retired. He can be retired. So you can read the translation. See here. Okay, read it.
Swayambhuva Manu, with the assistance of Lord Brahma, thus fulfilled his desires. With the permission of the great sage Narada, he delivered to his son the governmental responsibility for maintaining and protecting all the planets of the universe. He thus achieved relief from the most dangerous, poisonous ocean of material desires.
Yeah. What is the meaning of this? Ati vishama vishaya jalashaya ashaya. What is the meaning of that? When one is a king, there are innumerable desires that may cling to a king because he has the post, he has the position, he has the money, he has the power. He has people at his beck and call. So, and Now, when one retires, he is retiring from all these things, that the management affair of the entire maintaining and protecting people of all the planets in the entire universe. So that was with him, and he handed it over to Priyavrat. Then he got relief. That means now he is going to go for Vanaprastha after this. He is taking Vanaprastha and Sanyas, subsequently he will take. So he entrusted the governmental responsibility. So one fellow is quitting the scene, another fellow is getting into the scene. Correct, no? So the person getting into scene, his attitude should be one of taking up responsibility. Correct, no? It's like the, what do you call it, Olympic torch. You run with it and then you hand over to somebody. You hand out somebody, if that fellow immediately want to hand over, to whom will you hand over? He has to run some distance. Correct, no? You ran some distance and you handed over. Now he takes and he runs some distance. He hands it over. Like that it goes on. Correct, no? And you will also be allowed to hand it over to somebody else after some time. When you have to take your retirement, and then one can fully devote time for spiritual life. Every king had that facility. Many, many kings. You see Prithu and Narsi are going to forest. Malayadvaja and Vaidarbhi are going to forest. Dhritarashtra and Gandhari are going to forest. Many examples like that. You will find like that. Because the governmental responsibility is called as the most dangerous poisonous ocean, because it's not very easy to handle. But one should do it as a duty, responsibility, on behalf of Brahma, on behalf of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, in those times, they always chose a successor. That successor need not be necessarily Yuvaraj. Yuvaraj means son of the king. In case there are examples in India of king, one king had four sons, but none of them were competent. Then the king himself chose one minister's son, who was very competent, and then trained him as the next king, and then he entrusted the responsibility to him. In these things, the kings cannot be having a nepotistic tendency. You know nepotism? Nepotism means favoritism towards blood relatives. That's what he was showing. Who? Dhritarashtra. He was showing nepotism towards, his own sons. Dhritarashtra wanted Duryodhana, although his sons were unqualified. And then Yudhishthira was to be posted. Therefore, the kings would first of all choose a successor. So what considerations he had, if you see, he first checked that the citizens like him, the ministers like him, the government officials like him. And then he is also handsome, he is very chival-dressed. Already told you what are the qualities of a Kshatriya before. A Kshatriya should be, first of all, a devotee of God. You should have character. You should be chival-dressed. You should be munificent. Chaivalras means he should be able to face battle without fear. Munificent means very generous. He doesn't hoard things. Rather, he distributes things. He is always charitably disposed, generous. And is heroic, never runs away from a battle. And he is expert in maintaining and protecting Praja. And he is a devotee of God. He is always obedient to the saintly people who are teaching the God's teachings. And he always abides by the scriptures. So these kind of qualifications would be seen. And then you would further train a successor, prepare him to a point where he can hand over the responsibility. One more point from the same purport. Eight symptoms of Jivan Mukta, Prabhupada says here. If you see, it's coming in the later part of the purport. Yeah. Last 10-15 lines, if you see, where it begins, somewhere in the middle of the purport it begins. If you see here, if you see, this, yeah, the first symptom of one who is so liberated, Jivan Mukta. What is the first symptom? He says, freed from all sinful activity, apahata papa. He says, that's the first one. And then after 3, 4, 10, after 5, 6 lines, says another symptom is vimrityu. That's the second one. Achha, another symptom, one more is it saying vijara. Vijara means he is not subjected to miseries of old age. Like Uddhava, he was old, but he was not. His mati was fixed in the Lord. Correct, no? Another symptom is vimrityu. A liberated person himself lives in such a way that does not take on any more material bodies which are destined to die. Another symptom is Vishoka, callous to material distress and happiness. And then Vijigatsa, no longer desires material enjoyment. Is it given in Subodhini Guide, these things? Just check it. Not given in this. Sometimes they make a nice table and give, eh? But this is not given in this. Okay. So, then Vijigatsa, and then Apipata means there's no desire other than to engage in devotional service of Krishna. Satyakama, all his desires are directed to the Supreme Truth. Does not want anything else. Satya Sankalpa, any desire he has is fulfilled by grace of Krishna immediately. First of all, he doesn't desire at all. If he desires, it's immediately fulfilled. Yeah. Then Mahima means he returns, is returning back to spiritual world. How many are over? All are over, no? Eight. So eight symptoms of a Jivan Mukta, Papa says. Very powerful, no? If anybody can find out how to remember this eight, huh? It's a very nice way. Maybe you make some acronym or something. And, so these are all different. See, one thing we all know about Jivan Mukta is like a coconut which has withdrawn itself into the shell. Like it makes sound, kudukudu sound, I told you once before. Similarly, Jivan Mukta is unaffected by the outside world because his heart is sold out to Krishna already. It's called Jivan. What is that verse? Nikhil Ashwa Pyavastasu Jivan Muktasya Uchyate. That verse. Yeah. So he is quoting that here. So why Prabhupada is quoting that here? Because he is saying that he was elevated to spiritual world known as Vaikuntha. So therefore one should have these qualities for one to go back to Vaikuntha. Sridhar Swami has given this. Prabhupada says, Sridhar Swami says what it is. So he explains. Veera Raghavacharya states that in Chandogya Upanishad there are eight symptoms of a Jivan Mukta. This is quoted from Chandogya Upanishad. So I will not get into this details of this. But I have just made a mention of this. Because it can give us a clue on what are the factors counted in purifying our heart. We will again go through it quickly. What is the first one? Free from all sinful activity. Apahata Papa. Second, Vijara means, Jara means old, Jara, Vijara, correct, no? Third one, Vimrityu, free from death again. So easy to remember, Jara and Mrityu, correct, no? Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadi, Vise, no? So Vijara, Vimrityu, that, and then Apahata Pap is, Yetam, Yesham, Tu Anta, Katam Papam, that's Apahata Pap. And the next one, Vishoka, that means he doesn't do shok. And Vijigatsa means he has no desires for material enjoyment. Apipata means no other desire other than to engage in devotional service. He says, Satyakama, Satyakama is a very famous one. Satyakama, Satyakama means he always desires to serve the Supreme Lord, doesn't want anything else. Satya Sankalpa means whatever he desires is fulfilled. And then Mahima means returns back home, back to Godhead. Yeah. Sadharma means what is Sadharma? But the same quality is saying. It's called Sadharma. No. Sadharma means Sri Sukadeva Goswami says that the word Mahima means the devotee attains the qualities of the Supreme Lord. This is called Sadharma. Actually, another meaning of the word Mahima is Sadharma. That is saying. Yeah, just as Krishna is never born and dies, devotee. Okay, anybody without seeing the book, quickly we'll recollect few of this. Sanskrit qualities only. Apahata Pap, I have recollected one. Now, anybody else? Vijara, then? Vishoka, then? Vimrityu. Okay, four are over. Anna? What is Vijigatsa? Anybody knows? Little difficult, eh? No material desires. Then? Vishoka is over already. Satyakama, Satyakama, Sankalpa. Both are easy. And the last one is also Mahima. Go back to Godhead, Mahima. That is also over. What is missing out? Apipata means what? Only devotional service, yeah. We have to find out what is the root word in this. So, in case you are speaking anywhere about Jivan Mukta, few of these we can quote, correct, no? You can remember. Nice words, very nice. So, we go to the... Because that was Nikhilashvapati Avastha, so that says about Jivan Mukta. It says, Kaya, Vacha, Manasa, one is engaged in Lord's service. He's a Jivan Mukta. Correct? Now, what is that verse? Beginning? Ikhayasya Harirdasya Karmana Manasa Gira. It's very... Actually, if one becomes a Jivan Mukta, his body is called spiritual body. Because he has no separate interest at all, other than Krishna's interest. Okay, let's go to the sixth one. Read the translation. Maybe we can recite the verse also. Yasyaha Pandaveya Shoka Udaharanti Konutat Karma Raja Risher Naver Anvacharet Puman Apatyatam Agadhyasya Harihi Shuddhena Karmana. Yeah.
O Maharaj Parikshit, to glorify Maharaj Nabhi, the old sages composed two verses. One of them is this. Who can attain the perfection of Maharaj Nabhi? Who can attain his activities? Because of his devotional service, the Supreme Personality of Godhead agreed to become his son.
Yeah. So these two words are explained here. Says Shuddhena Karmana. Please read that. If work is not...
Work is not carried out in devotional service. It is contaminated by the modes of material nature.
Yeah. So he did Shuddhena Karmana. That means Harihi Shuddhena Karmana. He actually executed pure devotional service. Therefore he got Supreme Lord as his son. Okay. That is one thing explained. Below that, in the last 3-4 lines from the bottom, all material activities?
All material activities meant for satisfying the senses are contaminated. And Maharaj Nabhi did not perform anything contaminated. He simply executed his transcendental activities even when performing yajna. Consequently, he obtained the Supreme Lord as his son.
Yeah, therefore we should know Nabhi did not have a material desire. Although it was said earlier, that was for our understanding, Prabhupada said that. But Nabhi actually did not have any sense which was contaminated, you can imagine. See, Kadindriyai, Sadindriyai. These two words are used in Bhagavatam. You want me to show the verse? I got it now. Evam Varsha Sahasrani Manashashtair Manasukham Vidudano Apinatrapyat Sarvabhoma Kadindriyaihi. Read the translation.
Although Maharaj Jayati was the king of the entire world and he engaged his mind and 5 senses in enjoying material possessions for 1,000 years, he was unable to be satisfied.
Even after 1,000 years of enjoying life, he got only frustrated. Because they were kadindriyai, he says. Sarvabhauma kadindriyai. Sarvabhauma is king. Kadindriyai means impure senses. See, this is the one. See, kad indriyaha. Indriyahi means because of possessing impure senses. So opposite of kad indriyahi is sad indriyahi. So one more verse I wanted to show. This also you can recite.
Devahutiruvacha Nirvinnanitarambhuman Asadindriyatarshanat Yena sambhavyamanena prapannandham tamah prabho.
See, second line she is telling asadi indriya tarshanat, agitation of the impure senses. Nirvinna, disgusting, she is telling. Nitaram bhuman, oh great Lord, the agitation and of the impure senses is so disgusting. She's telling, Yena sambhavya manena prapannandam. Prapanna andam tamah prabho. I have fallen into the abyss of ignorance. Let's read the translation. Yeah.
Devahuti said, I am very sick of the disturbance caused by my material senses. For because of this sense disturbance, my Lord, I have fallen into abyss of ignorance.
This is a very important purport. Prabhupada says our senses are like a blanket over the soul. Our current senses, material senses. So they are actually not the real senses. The trouble or agitation creating senses are like a blanket over the soul. See, Prabhupada will say that if you see the purport, no? See, Prabhupada saying. Asat means impermanent or temporary senses. Read this.
We should know that beyond this temporary senses are our permanent senses, which are now covered by the material body. The permanent senses, being contaminated by matter, are not acting properly.
The permanent senses are in the soul. Like the soul has eyes, it has ears, it has nose, it has hands, legs, everything. But that is actually suppressed. It's not acting. Over that blanket has come. Now the blanket is acting. Right now actually we are functioning only with the impure senses. See, here is it. Here.
Devotional service therefore involves freeing the senses from this contamination. When the contamination is completely removed and the senses act in the purity of unalloyed Krishna consciousness, we have reached Sat Indriya or eternal sensory activities.
So our material senses are impure. Once they are purified, our spiritual senses start acting after that. Yeah, yes.
Eternal sensory activities are called devotional service.
Please repeat this. It's an important statement. Eternal sensory activities are called devotional service. Whereas temporary sensory activities are called sense gratification. Beautiful definition, no? That means temporary sensory activities is the blanket senses, I told you. That is sense gratification. Eternal sensory activities are called devotional service. Yes.
Unless one becomes tired of material sense gratification, there is no opportunity to hear transcendental messages from a person like Kapila. Devahuti expressed that she was tired.
So, majority of the living entities in this world don't get tired of their material senses so easily. They keep doing the same old thing. Punah punah, charvita charvananam. So one should get fed up. With material sensory activities or temporary sensory activities. Then one can inquire, who am I? Where have I come from? What am I meant to do? You know, where am I supposed to go? Those questions can be asked. Actually, any of you can say why we should get tired with material sensory activities? Yes? Yeah? Yeah? He's saying there is no value in it. For example, you know, you put food from the mouth and you release it from the back. Correct, no? And this activity is going on whole life. Correct? You know, yeah, you... Anybody thinks, if you see, like when you get up in the morning, the mouth is stinking, the body is sweating, all the holes of the body are emanating these things, and you have to take a bath. You have to... Once Urmila Mataji in Mayapur, she was giving a class. She was telling, I'm fed up with this body, which is a bag of flesh and bones, with repeatedly doing the same old activity. It will become unclean, you clean it, again it becomes unclean. And all the... She was making one interesting point. She said, the body emanates substances, the foul smell of which even we don't like, that which comes from our own body, she was telling. So she said, I get fed up when I see... So she said, that is why I was inquisitive about God. I wanted to know, who am I? And then she inquired, and then she took shelter of Prabhupada and she became a Prabhupada disciple later on. So she was telling that even a commoner can easily see this point. Nobody can say that it, just because somebody has passed through, it is my stool, so one has to become attracted to it. Nobody can be attracted. It's abominable things. One should get fed up with these activities. So she says that this temporary sensory activities, this is one reason you said they are valueless. I agree. But there is one more very important thing nobody has told till now. Why you should get tired? Yes? Never satisfied. One big haribol for that. So my spiritual master told one very meaningful sentence. He said, all the holes of your body will never be satisfied unless you fill them up with supreme hole, Krishna. WHOLE. Yeah, but then they will become satisfied. Eyes will never be satisfied seeing different temporary beauties in this material world until you see Radha and Chandra. Similarly, ears will never be satisfied until you hear Krishna Katha. Tongue will never be satisfied until you eat prasad. Similarly, every one of our senses, the more you struggle to satisfy them, the more their demands increase. So therefore, this is called kadindriya, temporary senses. Whereas, see, Nabi is called Harishuddhena Karmana. He was performing activities with pure senses, uncontaminated senses, which means spiritual senses. Therefore, he got Supreme Lord as his son. Seventh verse. Brahmanyonyakutonabher Vipra Mangala Pujitaha Yasya Barhishi Yagnesham Darshayam Asurojasa.
The second prayer is this. Who is a better worshipper of Brahmanas than Maharaj Nabhi? Because he worshipped the qualified Brahmanas to their full satisfaction, the Brahmanas by their Brahmanical prowess showed Maharaj Nabhi the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, in person.
Yeah. See, the previous verse talked about how he worshipped the Supreme Lord. This verse talks about how he worshipped the Brahmanas, the devotees of Lord Narayana. So he was a very intelligent king. He worshipped the Lord and the devotee, and he perfected his life by seeing Lord Narayana in person, by their expert chanting. Prabhupada says in the 4-5 lines from bottom of the purport, these Brahmanas were certainly very expert in chanting Vedic mantras. They were competent in performance of Vedic rituals. And over and above this, they were Vaishnavas. By their spiritual powers, they could call on the Supreme Lord and enable their disciple. Like that. By dint of devotion service, they made Maharaj Nabhi see the Lord face to face. He's saying, yeah. So therefore, see, I have written Brahmanya, the word is used, Brahmanya. The first word in the seventh verse, Brahmanya. Brahmanya means one who is devoted to serving the Brahmanas. It's called Brahmanya. So these two glories of Nabhi. As far as Lord Hari is concerned, what he did? Harishuddhena Karmana. He worshipped Lord Hari with his pure spiritual senses. See, devotion service means, one definition says, that we should serve the Supreme Lord with purified senses. That is devotional service. Not impure senses. We should serve the Supreme Lord with, what is that verse? Tatparatvena Nirmalam. Sarva Upadhi Vinirmuktam. See, when we do Sarva Upadhi Vinirmuktam, the senses are purified. Tatparatvena Nirmalam. They become Nirmalam. The word Nirmal comes in Bhagavatam also. Yan Nama Shruti Matrena Puman Bhavati Nirmalaha. It says, Mala goes away from the heart. Mala means Kamakrodha Lobha. So when Kamakrodha Lobha is removed from the heart becomes like a clean place. In village, if you go, some people have a mud hut, Inside the mud hut, if you see, they put gobar every day. And the floor is completely plain and very fragrant. And no mosquitoes, no flies, nothing. And it's a clean place. And it's a fragrant place. Similarly, you'll find the heart of the devotee, once it is cleaned up of this kama krodha lobha, there is no hankering, there is no lamentation, there is no thirst for honor. There is nothing to be attained in life. Such a heart is of a retired nature. Retired nature means, such a devotee is very blissful, prasannatma, na shochati, na kankshati. And what only resides in that heart is devotional service. So therefore he says, real devotional service can reside only when one is performing it with purified senses. Tatparatvena Nirmalam, he says. So that is the standard, Nabhi standard. Harishuddhena Karmana. And he was also a Brahmanya. So these are two very vital qualities. One towards the Lord and one towards devotees. Go to the eighth verse.
After Nabhi Maharaj departed for Badrikashram, The Supreme Lord Rishabhdev understood.
One quick point, side point before I forget. Devoti told her son, I mean spiritual master, Kapila, that you know, these material senses are like a blanket over the soul. They are not the real senses. They are temporary senses and they are also impure. And because the soul is inside and the soul perceives the world outside through the material senses. Therefore, the soul suffers sitting in this impure body. And then she said, if somebody is covered over by a blanket and somebody is kicking him and beating him, you know, then how can such a person know who is kicking, who is beating, how to come out? It's like that situation, no? So there Prabhupada says, akartuk karma bandoyam, there is one verse. Purushasya yadashraya, guneshu satsu prakrite, kaivalyam teshu atakkatam. She's asking, these three gunas are covering us and kicking us. So how do we understand and come out? Then the answer Kapila gives is actually surrender to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, as devotees, you know, our approach to the Supreme Lord should be one of done in a mood of humble surrender. If somebody is very proud of one's knowledge or somebody is very proud of one's any skill, then one cannot attract, one cannot go approach the Lord nearby. So we should know that the senses are currently impure, and with impure senses, like for example, we are executing devotion service, but it is not very pure. Like you will see, please say this one. Abhisandaya yohimsam dambham matsaryame bhava samrambhi bhinnadrik bhavam mai kuryatsa tamasaha. Read it.
Devotional service executed by a person who is envious, proud, violent and angry and who is a separatist is considered to be in mode of darkness.
Or ignorance. Correct, no? So, if we say that I am performing devotion service, we become envious of another devotee, or we become proud of our own devotion service, we become violent in speech and action, and we become angry. And we are separatist means we become independent-minded. The purport, Prabhupada writes one very nice point here. Read it.
One who approaches the Supreme Lord to render devotional service, but who is proud of his personality, envious of others, or vengeful, is in the mode of anger.
Like somebody is proud of his personality. Sometimes people go and ask, hey, do you know how many books are distributed? Can you guess? And that fellow may say, how many books? 50 books? No, 150. Hari Bol. No? Says, proud of his personality, I have done this. Or somebody says, do you know where I gave my lecture now and came? Where you give? No. Cognizant company. I give a 200 log baith kar taali baja rahte hain, ruk nahi rahte hain. Sometimes people, how many of you have seen somebody boasting about their devotion service? You have seen, no? We don't have to search much, we ourselves do it many times. We don't have to search. So that is the first one he is saying, proud of his personality. See, generally why we boast, because we want to convince others that we gave a outstanding performance. Correct, no? Sometimes people will little bit add more details also, which is not true also. You know, sometimes. Sometimes people exaggerate a little bit because the other person was not there in the scene. And also it helps them to earn more appreciation also. So, proud of his personality. And then when others are also doing something like me or better than me, then I become envious of others. Or vengeful means blaspheme them, criticize them, find fault with them. He is in mode of anger. Read further.
He thinks that he is the best devotee.
That's another big problem.
Devotional service executed in this way is not pure. It is mixed and is of the lowest grade, tamasah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur advises that a Vaishnava who is not of good character should be avoided.
One devotee was asking, Prabhuji, such a Vaishnava should be avoided. What about me? If I myself is such a Vaishnava, how will I escape from myself? Correct, no? He was asking. So then His Holiness Bhakti Bharat Bhagat Maharaj said, chant the holy name attentively. And if you are attentively chanting during the daytime, you can save yourself from bad association of others, and you can save others from your bad association. He said, you chant the holy name attentively. like that he was telling. You know. So, for us, bad association doesn't come only from other people. We ourselves know we have some trouble also. We ourselves. So, yeah, read for them.
A Vaishnava is one who has taken the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the ultimate goal of life. But if one is not pure and still has motives, then is not a Vaishnava of the first order of good character. One may offer his respects to such a Vaishnava because he has accepted the Supreme Lord as the ultimate goal of life. But one should not keep company with a Vaishnava who is in mode of ignorance.
Problem is what? When you keep company with such a Vaishnava, he will come to you and he will boast about himself and you will yourself feel a little uneasy. Are he is boasting too much about himself. Or sometimes he will blaspheme about another devotee to you. And you may say, Prabhu, I am busy with this. No, 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 I will complete this. You hear this. And he may tell you a lot of blasphemy about another devotee. Or you may see him violent, going out of control. So he's saying these are bad qualities. Why I showed you this verse, we should know that although we are doing devotional service, currently our devotional service is not very pure. That we should know. Because we are performing devotional service with our impure senses now. Actually, most wonderful thing is what? How the Lord is allowing us to stay in Sangha of devotees itself is a very wonderful thing. Correct, no? Despite our impure devotion service, Lord is so kind. He doesn't throw us out of association. He allows us to enter. So therefore, one should be very grateful. So, but Nabi performed devotion service, that is actually transcendental devotion service. It is beyond the three gunas. And the impure senses became purified. And also, he performed with spiritual senses. That is, those are two words. Harishuddhena Karmana and Brahmanya. Read the 8th translation.
After Nabi Maharaj departed for Badrikashram, the Supreme Lord Rishabhdev understood that his kingdom was his field of activities. He therefore showed himself as an example and taught the duties of a householder by first accepting Brahmacharya under the direction of spiritual masters. He also went to live at the spiritual master's place, Gurukul. After his education was finished, he gave gifts, Guru Dakshina, to his spiritual masters and then accepted the life of a householder. He took a wife named Jayanti and begot 100 sons who were as powerful and qualified as he himself.
My Lord, as himself, huh? They were all very, very qualified sons, yes.
His wife Jayanti had been offered to him by Indra, the king of heaven. Rishabhdev,
now Indra must have thought, I stopped the reins. I will go and give some gift now so that I can again revive my relationship with Rishabhdev ji. Yeah.
Rishabhdev and Jayanti perform householder life in an exemplary way, carrying out ritualistic activities ordained by Shruti and Smriti Shastra.
Yeah, correct. See, Prabhupada says in the purport, Paritranaya Sadhana Vinashadukram, these two functions of Supreme Lord when incarnate. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that in order to preach, one must live a practical life and show people how to do things. Apani achari bhakti shikayamu sabare. One cannot teach others unless he behaves the same way himself. Rishabhadev was an ideal king and he took his education in the Gurukul, although he was already educated because Supreme Lord is always omniscient. Still he had nothing to learn from Gurukula. He still went there just to teach the people in general how to take an education from the right source, from Vedic teachers. So therefore he went to the Gurukul. Then he entered householder life and lived according to the principle of Vedic, Shruti and Smriti. Last three lines of purport. He remained an ideal grihastha and taught his sons how to become perfect in spiritual life. These are some examples of how he ruled the earth and completed his mission as an incarnation. Similarly, about Lord Krishna also it is said, Krishna in his childhood in Vrindavan, he showed such childhood pranks which were fondly remembered not only by Yashoda and Rohini but also by all the mothers in Vrindavan, isn't it? And then when Krishna grew up, then there is one verse which says, Pashupala Sammatau. You will see this verse. This is a very beautiful verse. Shri Shuka Uvacha Tatascha Pauganda Vaya Shritau Vraje बभूवतुस्तौ पशुपालसम्मतौ गाश्चारयन्तौ सखिभिः समं पदैर् वृन्दावनं पुण्यमतीव चक्रतु. See, one day there was a meeting of all the coward men who jointly decided that, yes, now Gopal can become, you know, Vatsapal can become Gopal. They allowed him to go. Please read the translation.
Shukdev Goswami said, when Lord Rama and Lord Krishna attained the age of Pauganda, that is 6 to 10, while living in Vrindavan, the coward men allowed them to take up the task of tending the cows. Engaging thus in a company of their friends, the two boys rendered the land of Vrindavan most auspicious by imprinting upon it the marks of their lotus feet.
Yeah. So in this way, earlier he gave happiness to his mothers and other mothers. Now he gave happiness to the cows and calves. And he also gave happiness to his friends also. Then by dancing on Kaliya, he gave great happiness to the gopis. This is called Purvarag, we call it. Purvarag means he danced on Kaliya at the age of 5 years, 7 months. And but the Rasa dance took place at the age of 8, isn't it? So why he showed Kaliya dance? The gopis got an idea how Krishna is going to dance in future. He wanted to show them what a beautiful dancer I am. So on the top of Kaliya, like that Chakravarti Thakur has written. So he gave pleasure, and he gave pleasure to all the residents of Raja by lifting the Govardhan Hill. And 7 days, 7 nights, everybody got darshan of him. So now, when he returned to Mathura to kill Kamsa, after killing Kamsa, he gave happiness to all the people who were waiting for Kamsa to die. And after that, he comes to his home, parents' home. Who? To Vasudeva and Devaki. And he makes them happy by speaking very sweet words. Oh, my dear mother and father, you know, as soon as we were born to you in the jail, we left you and went away to Vrindavan. In this way, you never got to see our childhood pastimes. We never went to take the Yajnopavitam, you know, sacred thread and going to Gurukula. We never went. And you may be worried about our sanskaras, not yet done. Don't worry, we promise you. Now we will go and complete all our sanskara program in the Gurukula. Guru's ashrama, we will do that. And then they said, how much you suffered for us before begetting me, so many other children were killed, you suffered so much for us. So he made his mother and father cry out of great love. So his gratitude he expressed to Devaki and Vasudev made both the parents cry out of great love. Similarly, he made the 16,000 princesses who were anath or abala arrested by Bhaumasura. When he released them, they were like rejected lot in the society because although they were princesses, they were already touched by Bhaumasura, so they were unfit to be married by anyone. And Krishna accepted them as his queens and made them, he took the most fallen ones according to the Vedic society and gave them the position of queen of Dwaraka for all of them. See, why I am telling you, we have to consider the different facets of Krishna's life, how he made everyone happy. He made the Dwaraka queens very, very happy. By giving them chance to, when he comes in the evening, they would wash his feet, remove his mukut and comb him, and do arati for him, feed him prasad. He gave them the happiness of being their husband. Like that to the... Similarly, in Vrindavan, he plays on his flute and charms not only the gopas and gopis, but he also charms even the monkeys and cows and calves and deers and peacocks and everybody like that. So, the reason I was telling about Krishna is just like he is saying about Rishabhadev, how he gave great happiness to everyone by his own personal example. Actually, Lord Krishna set an ideal example for a householder also. There is one full chapter called Lord Krishna's Daily Activities in Dwaraka. Similarly, you will find as an ideal son, he expressed gratitude to Devaki and Vasudev. See, although he had to go to Vrindavan, when he came back, he expressed gratitude to them. Similarly, as an ideal friend of Arjuna, you know, how much Krishna worked hard to, you know, bring victory to the Pandavas as an ideal friend. As an ideal representative of Ugrasena and King of Dwaraka, he was thoroughly honest in dealing with Ugrasena, even the Shyamantaka jewel pastime, you see that. So we have to see, Lord Krishna says, why he teaches example. He says in Bhagavad Gita, you know that verse? Name parthasti kartavyam. Trishu lokeshu kinchana. You know this verse, no? He says, I have no duty in three worlds, but I also do duty. Why? Why I do that? Setting example. And then he says, karmanai vahi samsiddhim astito janakadayaha. See, janaka adeha means, apart from janaka, many other kings also set an example. Why? Loka sangrahamevapi sampashyan kartum arhasi. See, loka sangraha means to teach example to the people. Therefore he did, like that he says. So any leader should know that I should not set a wrong precedent. See, wrong precedent means you do one wrong kind of act, other people will say that you did it, so they will also do it. Correct, no? For example, some people in one kirtan, this thing, program, one devotee, you know, did some kind of sasar. You know sasar? You know, like that. You know, like that, toppling. You know, like this they do, you know, like this they do. So he did, and that was a senior devotee. So seeing that he is doing, then everybody started doing. Everybody started behaving like monkeys. Correct, no? Then people will imitate. Correct, no? 1% do it. Similarly, if people in the dancing, if somebody is dancing in peculiar ways, like some people have seen the Vrindavan, Vrijabhasis dance, how they dance in a certain way, and they also imitate, then other people also imitate, correct, no? So I am telling about imitating dance, but we can talk about imitating anything for that matter. Imagine if you're one brahmachari wearing a gold ring, for example. You're giving, like, please see the verse, you're saying, I say, hey, gold ring, Prabhuji is wearing. Then everybody will want to wear one gold ring. You understand, no? They will think this is the standard for a senior devotee. Correct, no? Anything you do. Therefore, he is saying that we should teach by example. Whatever we do, therefore, more things are caught than taught, it is said. You may teach, but people watch. People say, I will learn more by watching, not by hearing you. That is the nature of this world. Therefore, Shivadev, of course, he gave, sat and gave a lecture also. You can see the picture. You know, there is one which will come in the later chapter. You saw this picture? This one. Shivadev sitting, I mean, Shivadev giving lecture. Correct, no? Who is Bharata? You found out in that? One with the feather on the head. See, all the fellows, how attentive they are. Huh? Attentive like all of you. Correct, no? See, folded palms, isn't it? Very amazing. Huh? So he gives instruction also. It's not that he doesn't give instruction. He gives instruction also. But he also sets example. And the purport purpose is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also set example. Apani achari bhakti shikayama sabare. See, when Prabhupada went to Kumbh Mela, early morning it was very chill water. Still Prabhupada got up from the tent, went there and took a bath. All the devotees were shocked. Prabhupada, it's too cold. All the teeth are like, you know, chattering. Huh? And finally, the devotee is saying, is it compulsory to take bath? Devotees are talking. I devotees are like, Prabhupada is taking, so we have to take also. Huh? Why is he taking bath to show us? So then they also followed. Everybody, although it was very chill water. Prabhupada set an example like this in many places. We could give many, many examples on how Prabhupada set a very ideal example. Let's go to the next one. So read the translations.
Of Rishabhdev's 100 sons, the eldest named Bharata was a great exalted devotee, qualified with the best attributes. In his honor, this planet has become known as Bharata Varsha.
Next.
Following Bharata, there were 99 other sons. Among this were 9 elderly sons named Kushavarta, Ilavarta, Brahmavarta, Malaya, Ketu, Bhadrasen, Indrasprik, Vidarbha and Kikata.
So in the previous translation which you read, In that purport, Prabhupada says, the planet known as Bharatvarsha is also called Punya Bhumi, the pious land. At the present moment, Bharata Bhumi or Bharatvarsha is a small piece of land extending from Himalayan mountains to Cape Comorin. Sometimes this peninsula is called Punya Bhumi, he is saying. Yeah. Okay. And then the 11 and 12, also he is giving, in addition to this sense where he is talking about the Navayogendras. And then he is talking about, and the Navayogendras are all exalted, advanced devotees, authorized speeches of Srimad Bhagavatam. They were glorified due to their strong devotion to Lord Vasudev. He is saying, to satisfy the mind perfectly, I, Sukadeva Goswami, shall hereafter describe the characteristics of these nine devotees. When I discuss the conversation between Narada Vasudeva, where is coming? 11th canto. Come later. And the 13th verse, read it.
In addition to this 19 sons mentioned above, there were 81 younger sons, all born of Rishabhdev and Jayanti. According to the order of their father, they became well-cultured, well-behaved, very pure in their activities, and expert in Vedic knowledge and the performance of Vedic rituals.
That means Brahmanas. Huh? They became 81 Brahmanas. So 9 were Navayogendras and 81 were Brahmanas. Yeah. And then before that was explained, following Bharata, that means Bharata is a Kshatriya, and there were 99 other sons. Among these, the 9 elderly sons, the names are given, they all are Kshatriyas. That means 10 Kshatriyas, correct? First 10 fellows became Kshatriya, including Bharata. Then next 9 became Navayogendras. And 81 became Vedic Brahmanas. Totally how many? 100 totally, yeah. So there, Prabhupada writes an important purport. Read it, 13th purport.
From this verse, we have good information of how the castes are qualified according to quality and work. Rishabhdev, a king, was certainly a Kshatriya. He had 100 sons, and out of this, 10 were engaged as Kshatriyas and ruled the planet. 9 sons became good preachers of Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahabhagavatas, and this indicates that they were above the position of Brahmanas. The other 81 sons became highly qualified Brahmanas. These are some practical examples of how one can become fit for certain type of activity by qualification, not by birth. All the sons of Maharaj Rishabhdev were Kshatriyas by birth, but by quality, some of them became Kshatriyas and some became Brahmanas. 9 became preachers of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavata Dharma Darshana, which means that they were above the categories of Kshatriya and Brahmana.
See, this is a very important section of this chapter. Why? Because nowadays, all over the world, educated people are vehemently opposing the caste system. Especially educated masses. They have a wrong notion about this caste system. They think that the Brahmanas took the control in their hands in the Vedic times. And they controlled everybody else. They kept the kings in their clutches. And they mistreated the Shudras. By not giving them equal rights, you know. Like that, this kind of idea is there. And they think that the Brahmanas had monopoly over the society. And anybody born in a Brahmana caste, by birth itself, he becomes a Brahmana. That is their understanding. Correct, no? So, I'll just show you once more. See, this is what just now we read, Rishabhadeva. 100 sons. They are of different caste, correct, no? They are all born to one father, but within the family they are of different caste, correct, no? And then another one, King Yudhishthira is asking. See, Nahusha, when Nahusha had become a snake, you know, at that time there was a question answer. Here we see. He's asking, oh king, how can we recognize a true Brahmin? Yudhishthira is replying, read it.
Yudhishthira replied, a Brahmin is characterized by the qualities of honesty, purity, forgiveness, self-control, asceticism, knowledge and religiosity.
And then the Nahusha snake replied doubtfully.
The Nahusha snake replied doubtfully. The qualities you have attributed to Brahmins are also found in other classes of men. Yudhishthir smiled. If one finds these qualities in any man, then he should be known as Brahmin, no matter what his birth may have been.
See, this is exactly taken from Mahabharata. I'll show you one more verse from Bhagavatam, I'll show you. Yasya lakshanam proktam. Pumso varna abhivyanjakam. Kadanyatrapi drishyeta. Tatte naiva vinirdishet. Narada is saying this. Read it.
If one shows the symptoms of being a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra, as described above, even if he has appeared in a different class, he should be accepted according to those symptoms of classification.
See? Narada very clearly says, Yasya yal lakshanam proktam, he is telling. And now we may have a question. How is it that somebody is born in a Shudra family but exhibiting Brahmana? For example, there was in Salavega, very famous devotee in Jagannath Puri. He's a pure devotee, but he's a Muslim pure devotee. So how did a Muslim man become a devotee of Jagannath, if you see? So his father is a Muslim, mother is a Brahmani. So in the Muslim's times, you know, that Muslim wanted to marry her. She was a very good looking lady, so he married her. And then through her we got the Salavega. Salavega became great devotee of Jagannath. You will find like that. So this is what happened in India. Yudhishthira Maharaj says in another part of Mahabharata, a Brahmana son was always a Brahmana. A Kshatriya son was always Kshatriya. It was happening like that. But when the mixture of castes came, nobody could ascertain what the child is going to be. Therefore, then you have to, there is only one way to find out the child's, you know, caste. What is it? Qualities. You have to see the qualities. Therefore, somebody may appear like our Satyakama Jabala's guru asked him, who are you? What's your caste? Correct, no? By seeing his quality, he ascertained that he is a Brahmana. He did like that. So Narada says that. Prabhupada says that. Herein it's clearly stated that, you know, it's according to qualities, not according to, this is 7.11.35. Yeah, yeah. He's saying Karna was keeping Parashuram in his lap, and that Brahmar was poking a hole in his thigh and he tolerated it. Immediately Parashuram said, you are not a Brahmana. Brahmana, if he sees blood, he will faint. Where Kshatriya, it's poking hole and you're keeping quiet. You claim to be a Brahmana, he said. So by quality. So like that he says. Prabhupada says, High Court's judge's son is not a High Court judge unless he qualifies himself. As a Brahmana is saying. I wanted to show you something. Chaitanya Charan Prabhu had given some three nice points. Yeah, this is a well-education. Okay. See, what are the practical benefits of Varnashrama? Some of you may have a question. Why should this Brahmana and all this category we should do? People get confused. Better just keep it like the modern day society, we may think. But if you see, there are many, many vital benefits. Here is the first one. Provided
individual job satisfaction and security. In Vedic times, experienced elders would identify the natural inclination of a child and train him accordingly, thus empowering him to excel in his vocation and thus become emotionally satisfied and economically secure.
Is it not true? Actually, we all need to, like many of the brahmacharis have joined, now they are engaged as preachers or pujaris, or some of them are engaged in different projects. We all over a period of time understand in which field we are able to set well. Correct, no? And then when you set well, you feel very satisfied in that particular field. Otherwise, if somebody is, like there's a saying in English, a square peg in a round hole. You heard this saying? Now, in the modern day situation, that's also coming here. If you see here, read it.
Avoided needless competition and maximize social productivity. When people are trained according to their natures, all members of society, teachers, administrators, traders, artisans, pursue their respective professions without having to compete with each other and contribute constructively to society.
Somebody becomes an artist, somebody becomes MA, somebody. Like I have one of my family members, a nephew boy, distant boy. So he did his B.Tech in Electronics and Telecommunication, one of the IITs. After doing which he was not satisfied. Now he told his parents that I want to study English literature. So he went and joined MA English. And after completing MA English, MA MPhil he did. Now he is in Chennai, working in a college as an English teacher. After B.Tech Electronics, can you imagine? Because somehow or other he got into IIT and after studying he was not satisfied. So everybody has the inner calling for a certain field. So, here you see, nowadays what's happening? Read it.
Nowadays, when certain professions, engineering and medicine, for example, are glamorized, everyone chases after them. This leads to students in those fields undergo intense, often maniac competition.
This is before joining engineering.
Even successful students fear unemployment as too many candidates.
This is after completing engineering, this one.
Too few jobs. When students are educated contrary to their natures, they are unable to develop the competence expected of their profession, leading to harm or even havoc. Most of have heard of incompetent doctors prescribing wrong medicines.
This is during their studies. They understand that I am incompetent. And they face a lot of failures and they are somehow or other struggling to pass. Imagine one fellow gave 30 lakhs and got a MD surgeon. He became. Now he wants to do surgery in your belly. He is bringing a knife. Will you allow him? He got an MD only by giving money. He's a quack. He doesn't know how to operate your belly. So that was very dangerous, isn't it? And dearth of talent in other fields leads to decreased overall social productivity, correct? No? See, if everybody becomes an engineer or a doctor, then the other fields dry up, correct? No? See, there is one amazing news I'll tell you. We had one devotee called Ananteshwar Prabhu. He's also a computer engineer. At one time, he was taking care of 100-150 laptops and everything. Now he went to US, he's in Houston. So he wrote a long mail to me saying, I thought he must have joined Microsoft or something, doing work. He said, Prabhuji, I am making homemade ghee in Houston. What the gopis prepare, no? He makes homemade ghee and he sells to people in the West, and that's a big demand, he said. He said, I am making as much money as I would make in IT company. He's hearing nice bhajans, kirtans, hearing lectures, making ghee at home. Also, he has learned little simple Ayurveda. He has learned. Anybody has little trouble, they come and like a doctor, he prescribes medicines. And he is running his life very easily. So, read it.
Satisfies everyone's material needs in an efficient and uncomplicated manner. Communities whose members specialize in different fields can trade internally and become self-sufficient, thus avoiding the complications attendant with external dependence.
I have three video links sent by one Krishna Sanpa I have with me. That video clip shows how in India, even average man in India can take his wife and children to the market and purchase things for their satisfaction and bring them back to home. Whereas in the West, average people suffer a lot. Only the mediocre people suffer a lot. Very elite people, they can actually purchase things. So there is one video that shows about Indian culture itself. In India, if you see any temple or holy place, around that small businesses flourish. You have seen that? So in this way, everybody does a little business. Even blind people also, they sell some play toy, correct? No? And they sell it and the livelihood is going on. They don't have to become engineer. No? Everybody doesn't have to become engineer. So, So caste system by classification, by activity, not by birth. Now we have almost reached the time now. The last thing is perfection of government is that citizens are satisfied. That's the 18th one. Quickly read the translations, we'll finish it off. 14th one finished, huh?
No.
14th translation.
Being an incarnation of Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Rishabhdev was fully independent. Because his form was spiritual, eternal and full of transcendental bliss. He eternally had nothing to do with four principles of material misery, birth, death, old age and disease. Nor was he materially attached. He was always equipoised and he saw everyone on the same level. He was unhappy to see others unhappy and he was well-wisher of all living entities. Although he was a perfect personality, the Supreme Lord and controller of all, he nonetheless acted as if he were an ordinary conditioned soul. Therefore, he strictly followed the principles of Varnashram Dharma and acted accordingly. In due course of time, the principles of Varnashram Dharma had become neglected. Therefore, through his personal characteristics and behavior, he taught the ignorant public how to perform duties within Varnashram Dharma. In this way, he regulated the general populace in householder life, enabling them to develop religion and economic well-being and to attain reputations, sons and daughters and material pleasure and finally eternal life.
Dharmartha Kama Moksha, yeah.
By his instructions, he showed how people could remain householders and at the same time become perfect by following the principles of Varnashram Dharma.
Okay, next.
Whatever action is performed by a great man, common men follow. Although Lord Rishabhdev knew everything about confidential Vedic knowledge, which includes information about all types of occupational duties, he still maintained himself as a Kshatriya and followed the instruction of Brahmanas as they related to mind control, sense control, tolerance and so forth. Thus he ruled the people according to system of Varnashram Dharma, which enjoins that the Brahmanas instruct the Kshatriyas and Kshatriyas administer to state through Vaishyas and Shudras.
Next.
Lord Rishabhdev performed all kinds of sacrifices 100 times according to instruction of Vedic literature. Thus he satisfied Lord Vishnu in every respect. All the rituals were enriched by first class ingredients. They were executed in holy places according to proper time by priests who were all very young, all young and faithful. In this way Lord Vishnu was worshipped and the prasad was offered to all demigods. Thus the functions and festivals were all successful.
Yeah, correct. Next, last, 18th one.
No one likes to possess anything that is like a will-o-wisp or a flower in the sky, for everyone knows very well that such things do not exist. When Lord Rishabhdev ruled this planet of Bharatvarsha, even common man did not want to ask for anything at any time or by any means. No one ever asks for a will-o-wisp. In other words, everyone was completely satisfied and therefore there was no chance of anyone asking for anything.
Very rare, no? Can you think of a government and citizens? The citizens say that we are completely satisfied, we don't want anything. Very rare. The people are absorbed in great affection for the king. Since his affection was always expanding, they were not inclined to ask for anything. Saying. And then below, Prabhupada says, fourth or fifth line from Purport. During the reign of Maharaj Rishabhdev, people were so well equipped that they did not want to ask for anything. And they were immensely supplied with all necessities of life due to Rishabhdev's good government. Consequently, everyone felt full satisfaction, did not want anything. This is the perfection of the government. If the citizens are unhappy due to bad government, the heads of the government are condemned. During these democratic days, monarchy is disliked by the people. But here is an example of how an emperor of the whole world kept all the citizens fully satisfied by supplying the necessities of life and following the Vedic principles. So Prabhupada says in one another purport that people should be given sumptuous food. In any festivals, any big events, meetings, happenings, people should be given. And that is the first thing people look for. There should be no poverty anywhere in the country. Nowadays there is a problem of division of grocery and everything, vegetables and everything across the country. So in one place there is excess and another place there is lack. But if the king expertly does it, the people get their food properly, then clothing properly, shelter properly, then half their anxiety is finished, he says. Then after that they have to be emotionally satisfied. So in one purport in Prithu Maharaj you will read, it says that the king should satisfy the hankerings in the minds of the people by giving them varnashrama engagements. Like that he says. That means the king should understand the hankerings of people. What are they hankering for? Everybody has a, like Brahman has a hankering to study Shastra. Kshatriya has a hankering for protecting others. Like that everybody. So Vaishya wants to do business and make money and give charity, you see. Everybody's hankerings in the mind should be satisfied by the king. So if people's food, clothing, shelter is arranged, the body is satisfied. Then the emotional support is arranged, then mind is satisfied. Especially mind becomes satisfied when one has a suitable engagement. He says, varnashrama engagement, accordingly. So, and then if a king is a righteous king, then the nature also cooperates. Nature cooperates means soothing climate. It's not too cold, it is not too hot. There is no ativrishti, there is no anavrishti. And even there is no natural calamities. And all citizens are living very happily, peaceful. There's no akala mrityu, you know. And everywhere people are living very happily, like Ramarajya we say, you know, like that. So the perfection of government is that the citizens are satisfied. So Rishabhadev kept his citizens completely satisfied that nobody actually wanted to ask for anything. It's very rare government. So we have completed these two chapters. Tomorrow when we come, we will start with the fifth chapter. Srila Prabhupada ki. Aur Bhakta Vrinda ki.